Yeah, I don't. For some reason, I'm kind of really invested in this World Cup, and I think sometimes we maybe took it for granted that they'd win the World Cup, and when they didn't win it in 2014, you know, that was a bit of a shock to everybody. But, you know, I think the skill level's improving every time I see them playing. I think they've had a good bit of time together, and it's really exciting coming this game coming up. Awesome.
Yeah, where do you think the game has got to? Now, we know, Farah, for example, the stats came out last year that the women's numbers, the growth of women's rugby in New Zealand exponentially is going up. So are we getting closer, do you think, to the women's game becoming truly professional? Will it ever get to that point?
We're definitely at that point already with the sevens. So that's been great. With sevens being included in the Olympics, it's given that a bit more impetus. And, you know, we've got contracted players in that part of the game who are also playing in the 15s version. So that's really great. I think we need to figure out some pathways and work on that a bit more before we get to the fully professional stage. But I do think we're recognising that with England having paid players and, you know, the level of fitness and skill that they have, that we need to start looking at that if we want to stay competitive.
Because the thing here is, Farah Palmer, you look at a Portia Woodman who's become a rock star in this tournament, and look, I put up one of her tries the other day, and it was so humbling to see on Facebook on my page just the amount of reaction from punters sitting back just going, wow, that was sensational. But as you say, she's immersed in the sevens program, so she's got the funding behind her. In terms of the other players here, I mean, is it still a difficult balance here between them wanting to achieve their rugby goals but also having to manage the fiscal side of life, living life and being able to be a worker as well as a rugby player?
Yeah, that's always the, you know, you have to make sacrifices and choices, and some of these players that have gone over to the World Cup made a commitment to just focus on rugby for 3 or so months, so they've gone to part-time work, or, you know, or they have understanding bosses who give them, you know, leave. So you've always got to be negotiating, and that can sometimes be taxing. But they're fully committed. They, you know, they might be amateur in status, but they're professional in the way that they approach their game. And it would be nice to see that that's being acknowledged in some monetary way.
Because the thing about it, Farah, I guess it always chicken and egg here. If you're bringing in commercial dollars, then therefore that leads on to contracts. And as I said, hopefully we're seeing the Black Ferns fully professional inside a decade or so. What are they generating? I mean, what money? I mean, for example, a World Cup like this, when they go across there, is that covered by World Rugby? Is there a prize pool for it? I guess what I'm wondering here, is there being and has there been an increase in corporate interest in women's rugby?
I think at the World Rugby level, yes. So there'll be sponsors that are associated with the event, and I think that they're improving in that area. And I think Ireland have done a great job of hosting, and it's all at one venue, and they're kind of trying to create that fan atmosphere. So it's been really great on that front. We're still looking and exploring ways to commercialise the women's game at the national level. And we've got AIG, for instance, they help fund the Black Ferns as well as the other national teams, but we need to do more of that. So that's where we're at the moment. We're exploring commercial opportunities for the women's game.
So Farah, for example, and this was interesting to me because I remember covering a couple of the players that took out the World Cup in Russia a few years back, and the men's team won the gold medal at the same tournament. Now, they came back business class and the women's team came back economy. And look, fair point to them, they were a bit frustrated by that. So I'm wondering here, for example, when the women's team now travels to events like this, as I said, the pinnacle, do they go economy or business?
I'm pretty sure that the women's team go economy. I don't think they go business. But, you know, just, and I don't think the women expect it. It's probably not until they realise that maybe the men might be getting different treatment that it becomes an issue. But I'm pretty sure they win economy. I haven't heard any
other. No, but that's difficult though, because again, Portia Woodman was quoted during the week because I think some of the teams at this tournament had to play 4 games in 14 games. The American coach said, again, it's downgrading the product here in comparison to the men. Although I want to put this into context because I was going back again, I remember covering 2011, Farah, where, you know, the island nations, for example, at the 2011 World Cup were playing midweek games, as you might remember. So it's not always been easy for the men's sides, but I think they're right here. 4 games in 14 days, it should be extended a wee bit more here because it's a bona fide World Cup, and recovering from those matches ain't easy when you've got a 2 or 3 day gap in between.
That's right. And then when I played in 1998, we had 16 teams attending the World Cup, and it went for longer. And I think to try and cut costs and to keep the costs down, World Rugby decided to shorten it and to reduce the number of teams. So I would like to see it getting up to that point where we have 16 teams in the tournament, and that we do give it the recognition and the time in between games that would be the ideal scenario. And as I said, I'm pretty sure World Rugby are trying to explore ways of making it a sustainable competition over time.
Dr. Farah Palmer, one of the absolute icons of New Zealand women's rugby as well, on the board of the NZRU as well. New Zealand taking on England 6:45 tomorrow morning, guys. Farah, in terms of the rugby you've seen, the rugby purity, and I was actually working out with my PT on Friday morning, and he's a massive rugby buff, used to play it a lot. And I said, Paddy, you know, what have you thought of the women's game? And he's really impressed, and that's the feedback I'm getting. Look, I had the odd comment of some bloke called Philip saying it's, you know, crap rugby, why would I watch all of it? But I've found myself, for whatever reason, and maybe because sometimes it becomes different, Farah, and we're seeing the All Blacks at the moment being so dominant against an Australian side, that you're sitting back and saying, I'm enjoying this because it's different to watch and they're bloody good.
Yeah, well, you're talking to the converted here. I mean, I watch the game and I am absolutely engrossed in it. I'm passionate about it. And, you know, once a black fern, always a black fern. You know, I know that on Facebook, everybody is commenting on the games. And I do think it has been really interesting and exciting to watch. And we've got, I think, the Sevens players have added a little bit of that fitness level and showing that, you know, spending time together has helped improve their skill base, and I think that's really great. But, you know, I just think that we're at a time now where people are starting to take women's sports seriously. The team has got some personalities in it, and the way that that Sky are covering the games is really good as well. You know, different camera angles and the commentary, it's all just adding to the product that we're looking at. It's great.
Why do you think the numbers of young women taking up rugby are on the increase? I guess I asked this around what's happening now with the physicality of the games and concussion and, you know, head knocks and all of it. What is it, do you think, that has led now to young women saying, I want to be part of the sport?
Combination of things. I think I would suggest that women have always said they wanted to, and girls have said they wanted to play. It's just now that there are opportunities and provincial unions are opening up these competitions so that more girls can play. And they're seeing the Portia Woodmans and the Renee Whitcliffs and the Fio'orfa Masilis, they're seeing them on television, so they want to play. I've got a four-year-old daughter, and she said to me one day, Mummy, I want to play rugby like you did when you were a daddy. And to me, that, you know, she only sees men playing rugby on television, but she is aware that there's women's rugby. So I just think there's more awareness.
That's cool.
And these girls have given the opportunity to play.
Farah, as well, I mean, there has been a lot said and written around issues of the game at the moment as far as the men are concerned. You're on the board, you're at the board meeting yesterday, there is this respect and responsibility paper coming out. You've had a look at it. I don't expect you to give me the in-depth idea of what's played out on that so far, because it's going to be released, I think, next week. Does that give you hope, though, when you read that the issues that the public, I feel, need to be addressed will be addressed?
Yeah, I mean, the whole reason why the Respect and Responsibility Review was commissioned was because we know that we've got to make some changes. So, you know, we're all looking forward to kind of releasing this report. And the board have been involved along the way, and we've had, like, regular updates on how it's all going. So, yeah, there are things in there that are talking about what we need to change in terms of the culture. So it's definitely going to hopefully produce some change.
Do you feel torn at all because your role on the board, and I'm not saying you were brought on the board explicitly for this, because your power and your knowledge base is far greater than just that, but do you feel this argument that a lot of people are saying to me, all of this is private business, or do you see this is damaging the game, as Steve Chu said last weekend, things need to change?
Look, we have a vision, or, you know, about being something that unifies and inspires, and so if we're going to do that, we really need to figure out how we can do that. And when we put ourselves out there as something, as role models, and this is part of our brand, yeah, I think this is very important. You know, respect and responsibility. We try to say we reflect New Zealand society, so we need to be in line with the values of New Zealand society.
Farah, I leave you with this. Couple of things. Tonight's match, Australia. Now, apparently they're struggling a wee bit as far as tickets, and I think that's probably a hangover from what was an incredible Lions series for all sorts of reasons. Do you, as what I'm noticing, particularly on my page, Vici on Sport, I'm starting to notice, Farah, a few of the fans going, oh, God, thank God it wasn't 70 points last week. That would have ruined, destroyed poor old Australian rugby. Farah, where do you stand? Are you in that camp that's going, bring it on, let's just cream them again tonight, or are you starting to go, no, 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 poor old Australia?
Yeah, come on. I think, you know, people were saying to me the other day, oh, poor Hong Kong, the Black Ferns beat them by 100 points. And I was like, well, come on, seriously, if you're going to be in a game, you don't want people to take pity on you. You want them to bring their best game. So I hope both teams bring their A game and thrash it out. And if that means the All Blacks win by a lot of points, then that's great.
Oh, I love you. Also, Sir Colin Meads, saw you down there, Farah, for the unveiling. I went down there midweek to just sort of catch up with the Meads family, have a chat with them about what they've got planned over the next couple of days. The funeral was just going to be absolutely extraordinary. It was a really strange feeling though, Farah, because being around the statue and Kiwis were turning out from all over the country and foreigners who wanted to take photos and pay their respects and lay down flowers. But, you know, because I guess that day was Colin when he walked through the crowd and everyone just stopped and saw the mana of this particular individual there. But some of the things I've got planned, Farah, for example, Sir Colin on Sunday afternoon, the club room, they call it Sunday footy, I think it's called, or Sunday school, I should say. The coffin's going to be there, Farah, in the club rooms for the last beers with the great man. Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, and I think that kind of reflects not only the legacy of Colin Meads, but what he was like as a man and a community man, community focused, loyal, you know, to the core. And that would have, you know, everybody knows that that's the kind of thing he would appreciate. So, you know, it's going to be a big funeral, and you know, everybody from the grassroots right through to come at the higher kind of accolades of rugby will be there to acknowledge this great man. There's a saying in the Māori world, you know, a great tōtara has fallen, and it's kind of ironic that he's called Pine Tree, because he really is a bit of a tōtara, and we'll all be there to acknowledge him and his family.
Farah, I look forward to seeing you on Monday. I say good luck tomorrow morning. Are you a bad fan these days when you watch? What do you like watching the Black Ferns, Farah? Are you,
screaming, yelling, jumping up. I've been waking up the kids and the family in the middle of the night and screaming at the TV. And I've actually got together a bunch of the older Black Ferns and Otago women players, and we're all meeting at someone's house, and we're going to have a family occasion in front of the television.
Oh, that is awesome. You enjoy a big weekend. As I said, I can't wait to see the girls finish the business tomorrow. Thank you, as always.
Thank you very much.